not reported. And so we experience these things in an electric environment as a one-body politic, an electric world. We all experience it, but the meaning is not there. And when I say we experience it, what I really mean to say is that subconsciously it's affecting us, and yet it's subconsciously that it's affecting us, and yet we're not consciously hoiking it up for our perusal. And, you know, there's so many great examples of this. I think the satellite, Sputnik, is a great example of how the effect of the satellite was something that we all experienced, and yet we didn't understand that it meant Global Village.
Global Theater.
Global Theater, exactly. It was only the artists at the time who had the pristine perceptions to be able to see and therefore understand what it was. Another terrific example of art is the effect of is Picasso. And Surratt, who was painting television long before television, back to the Picasso, the effect of electric technology is to obsolesce time and space. Picasso, being an artist, recognized this, and therefore within his art form, pulled out the spaces and gave the top, the bottom, all the different dimensions all in one plane. In other words, he was miming the effect of the electric environment by pulling out the time and space. The time, space between you and me is obsolesce. The space between all our listeners at this moment is obsolesce. They might as well be in the same room. And so the effect of technology is total and instantaneous. And the experience is there, and unless we understand the effects, we can't wake it up and understand the meaning, and therefore we're left in the dark with our ignorance. And today we live in a world where there is no art, i.e. people aren't educated and brought to understand the nature of the environment in which they are living. And, of course, you and I have discussed this recently a lot. It's come to the fore of our conversation. Specifically, it was Lewis in his book, Men Without Art, pointed this out long ago. And I think this is creating a great stress today in our society. It's amazing how we think we live in a free society. I think the most amusing thing is that we in North America think we live in a free society, in which our views, we're able to say anything we want to say and do anything we want to do, and therefore that's called freedom. And really, we're just being bombarded with so much propaganda that they've told us what freedom is and defined it for us. But there's certain people who realize that when they start to play around, there is no real freedom. I guess people like your friend who talked to Nivelle and Oswald, and, you know, those people who start to get on the fine line and realize that there really is no freedom. I mean, Larry Flint, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, the furry limb syndrome.
Yeah, the furry limb syndrome. People who start to realize that, this is all just a big illusion.
Pictorial illusion.
Yeah, yeah.
You're saying we don't have freedom. I would say to explain that would be that our senses are programmed. In that sense, we don't have freedom. Our eyes and ears are programmed, the pace of their experience.
Yeah, the media today, all the media, are the juicy piece of meat carried by the burglar to distract the watchdog of the mind, to use McLuhan's at the same. But these events have to be talked about because the Battle of the Harvest Moon is there, the shooting down of the space shuttle is there, and these are the real events and crises. And
solar government problems.
Yeah, the solar government problems. Whereas the things that people see on TV now, the Iraq, all the different things are just, well, you said it, what, global theater. Just global theater, strictly that. I guess a new disease created in order to offer the cure that they want to offer.
Yeah.
What is the cure that they're... What disease are they trying to create? What cure are they trying... And, of course, LaRouche does talk about this to a certain degree, although I still would rather... I still think that the Beater's more in... unfortunately, he's not around to fill us in, but he was really... he was one of the last artists around, and I guess the only last one left is you.
Yeah, now, how would you say, what, in understanding what I do, is art? How could you say, what do I do that would fulfill your preference for that kind of art?
Well, number one, you do use the material of other artists, McLuhan, Beater, et cetera, et cetera.
Small A artists.
Yeah, small A artists, so that you're a conductor of an orchestra in, when you're doing that.
Yeah.
And you're bringing us art form that was created by other artists. And in that, as well as your own ability to mix it together, I guess the role of the artist today has... I mean, the role of the artist is getting harder and harder and harder.
To be expressed.
To be expressed and to be an artist is an extremely difficult task. It probably is the most difficult task in our society.
Yeah, you mean small A art,
yeah.
Whereas capital A art is business.
Is what?
The capital A art is business. Cultures are business.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I'm not talking... Capital A art does not offer any updating of consciousness for our society.
Do you
it's
think...
merely another distraction.
An anesthetic.
Yeah, it's an anesthetic.
Would you say dialogue is the most important part of small A art?
Yeah, propaganda ends where dialogue begins. That's the beginning.
Conversation.
Proper conversation.
In the sense of... conversation that's not embedded in its own content is trying to explore the form of its content, of its conversational
organizing technique. Ignorance for discovery.
Organizing ignorance for discovery. Tom, I'd like to end on that.
Yeah.
How do you feel, Mike? Have we gone too long with Tom? Or you okay with Tom? Okay, you're still on. You're doing okay.
Well,
do you want to hear some stuff on Kuwait, or do we do that later? I mean, I'd be interested in your input on it.
On Kuwait?
I'd be interested in your response to the pattern I'd lay out.
That you've laid out?
Yeah, I haven't laid out it yet.
No, that you're going to lay out.
Well, yeah, but it's not necessary unless you want to talk about something else, about the art situation.
Well, you know, I don't want to disrupt your show. If you've got that plan, go ahead.
No,
that's... I just don't want to really dwell on it too much because it really is part of a global theater distraction.
Right. Okay, what would you like to converse?
Well, I think that the other thing that we can discuss is this issue of oral cultures versus written cultures around the world battling each other.
But they're in both inside a tactile environment. We're witnessing tactile culture as the ground, right?
That's correct.
All right, so you got the battle between the oral and the written as a figure.
Mm-hmm.
As actors in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
But the tactile culture is imploded, invisible, inaudible, and yet it is expressed.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But I think that what's happening today is in the McLuhan office, what's happening is that there is a there's a senility setting in. The frozenness of the TV environment has... There's a senility setting in that it makes it even harder for people, getting people to think, to gain a perspective of things.
That's tactile culture. Just operating on feeling and instinct.
The tribal environment is a very, very violent world. And we're moving more and more into a tribal environment. And as we move more and more into a tribal environment, we are going to become more and more violent. And we will be settling our differences more with violence. both, and you know, when I violence to cross boundaries, not only hardware violence, but we're trying to solve a lot of our problems with software violence.
Yeah.
And it's causing tremendous chaos.
And if one saw the depth of violence we're heading into, then they would understand the idea of turning off the present tactile environment as a temporary anti-environment, right?
That's right. I don't think you and I both know that, as you said to the earlier caller, you made it very
clear
that
it won't happen.
What would happen, and that it wouldn't be a solution, but by juxtaposing two environments, perhaps people would see that there was something else out there. And I think that's the key. It's so hard to show people that there's something else out there. They've been so able to solidify people's mindset to believe that this is the way it ought to be, that it's so difficult for people who know otherwise to open up their eyelids. And this is why the role of the artist is so difficult. And it gets more aggravating and frustrating all the time. And it reminds me of years after the Kennedy assassination, how frustrating it was when you started to realize that the people who were behind it were now creating, bringing out and saying there wasn't a conspiracy in order to distract people into thinking it was, well, the mafia or this or that.
You mean when they're saying there is a conspiracy?
Yeah, they were saying there is a conspiracy, turntables in order to deflect the conspiracy popular theory away from them.
Yeah.
Now there's another issue. Let's just talk about it. It's worth bringing out now. Once again, we're starting to hear rumblings from this chap down in the United States by the name of White, who claims that his father was one of the shooters. He says his father was a policeman behind the picket fence.
That's right.
That's very interesting. That does fit in very well with what we know to be most of the facts.
Well, I talked to Skolnick a couple of nights ago, and he had gotten a call several months ago. He knew nothing about this white people, this Ricky White, and he knew nothing about the Assassination Research Center in Dallas that's sponsoring him. Now, it's called the JFK Assassination Information Center in Dallas. Now, Skolnick is certainly the godfather of this research up there with the godmother, Mae Russell.
Yeah.
And for Skolnick not to have any touch and contact with these people and them not to be in touch with him all these years is interesting. But out of the blue, the uncle of Ricky White called him several months ago, and he'd never heard of him before, and told him all the stuff that Ricky White had in his press conference on Monday and other stuff. And this uncle said he was the brother of Roscoe White, Ricky White's father, who fired from the grassy knoll. And the uncle said that Roscoe White told them a lot of stuff before he died in 1971 about how it was pulled off and how he did it. Now, why would they contact Skolnick before this press conference was held on Monday, which, by the way, I predicted almost a year ago that the real truth and facts of the Kennedy assassination would start coming out in 1990. Now, the point is this the truth, or is this one faction aware that the other faction is going to try to blame them, and it gets to a confused level where no longer is it just admitted there's a conspiracy, but the factions in the conspiracy now point the fingers at each other. This is the question I have about this Ricky White and the question that Skolnick raises, and we'll be playing his message on Kent's show.
That really is something that, in this world where paradigms can be created in false ideas, and we know there are people and groups out there that want to try and shift the society. What is, you know, black holes? Is the world really getting warmer? Is there really an ozone hole?
Yeah.
That you have to worry about, and it's very hard and it gets frustrating. It gets very, very frustrating. I get very frustrated about it and have to turn off for many, many months. And certainly admire you, because you're a person who's just never been turned off, and you just keep on plugging away at it.
Because it rolls off me like water off a duck, because I know the medium is the message in large part. I'm not too involved in the content, but therefore I can understand the battles of the content contours.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why, as Norman Mailer said about Marshall's work, the statement the medium is the message, the message is one of the most useful contributions to strategic survival in the 20th century.
Yeah.
But it's not the only thing, because Marshall was very interested in secret societies. He's fully aware of the conspiracies afoot. And that's why we bring in LaRouche information and Mae Brussel and these other things to acquaint people
with... creating diversions on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the interesting thing I think that people have to keep in mind and is that what made McLuhan famous, as Tom Wolfe said, was what if he's right? Just as the phonetic alphabet destroyed Greek civilization, TV it will and is in the process of destroying our civilization. And what the final result will be, I don't know. Countdown to Captivity was a show which was done on CKLM.
4 years ago by you?
4 years ago by me. And at some point, I think it'll be right to bring it back and retrieve those old shows, because we certainly were bang on with our predictions. But certainly I'll leave you with this. President Bush is between Iraq and a hard place. I think there's some puns there that we could work on in the next few weeks.
But, well, I just think when you say we're turning senile, it reminds me of the statement McLuhan made that all societies under electric tactile effects will turn to stone. So you have between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
The rock would be the electric tactile extreme effects, which we've reached now, and the hard place would be the old hardware boys of the military-industrial complex. So Bush or any oral office character, any global figure like the presidential situation, is in the interval between the electric freezing, the cold environment, and the old hot environment, which is was
the men from Iron Mountain.
The men from Iron Mountain.
Yeah.
Now he's caught between the men from Iron Mountain, the hard place, and the rock, which is the electric environment turned to stone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'll leave you on that, Bob. Thanks again. And I know it's lonely at the top, but when there's only one artist left in the world, it's a hard job.
Well, it's no problem if there's people to converse with who have an idea of what it's about.
Yeah, okay.
So if you have more input and you stay awake, call it back later.
I will.
Okay, thanks.
Take care.
Okay, Tom, bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Mike.
Okay.
We getting more calls, or should we go in with more content from you?
I just thought we don't hear from Tom too often. So
yeah.
It's always... it's always a pleasure to hear.
He is a CKLN alumnus.
Yeah.
You know, and...
it's interesting what Tom said, because I guess it would refer more to the capital A artists.
Yeah.
The phenomena of the art strike, which we're...
That's a strike against capital A art.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because it's they disagree with the concept of art as a commodity, and which is all that it's become. And, of course, an art strike will resolve nothing. And I think, as we've said here before, I think the art strike itself is a sham. The art strike itself is art.
Well, they do have a schedule. They know it cannot be a long-term program. They have set themselves a time limit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they seem to see it themselves as a fake anti-environment. But the art strike, the phrase itself, it is media ecology applied to the specialism of art, right? So I would say another part of human scale returned in the solar theater. Since that's the dominant mood now in the planet, return to a human scale in our solar system, that art strike, these artists, capital A artists who want to do this, are picking up that mood and they're applying human scale to themselves. They do not see it a valuable human interaction to interplay with the commodification of the art world, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a felt need there to return to human scale in the art world. But... So that shows that we're post-electronic in our sensibility. We have returned to human scale. I mean, even huge industries want to return to human scale.
Yeah, that reminds me also. Do you remember last year? It was about a year ago at this time that we had that network with the people in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So that's going to be happening the next show we do again.
All right.
We'll get calls from other parts of the U.S. plus from Madison as they improvise and do their Festival of the Swamps. From Madison, Wisconsin, so we'll see what happens.
So you're predicting that.
In 2 weeks.
If we don't have a call...
We do have a call.
Okay.
We should have a call anyway, as long as the person's still there. Hello?
It's the only connection I have with the outside world. My voice is going out. And these earphones, and when something clicks, I wonder, oops, am I on the air?
By the way, my wife loves your theme song.
Huh? Yeah. Is that your sound effect or theirs?
It's theirs.
Okay.
They're echoing my,
yeah,
my sound effect.
You know, that voice reminds me of your friend at Grassy High, the actor who made the funny call from Whitby.
Dan, yeah.
It sounds like something that Dan got a few bucks doing the tape for this person. See, River Run, eh? The first word of Finnegan's Wake? River Run would be the movement of the media archetypes, the fake movement and interplay between the media archetypes within a electrified stone situation. Can a rock have water flow through it? Yes, it can. So the River Run is the river flow of the interplay of the archetypes, which have no ground to hold on to. So the rock is a river. Now, these were two symbols in Finnegan's Wake, stone and water. Under electric conditions, they interpenetrate.
Do you think that's what this caller is trying to transmit?
Yeah, I think the caller is, I mean, I don't think this caller's ever called before. They've studied my show for many months and decided this is the symbolism, the most basic symbolism I'm using. Congratulations to them, they picked it up.
We can just let this go, I guess, if you'd like.
Yeah.
It's about quarter after one.
Already? We haven't even got to the problem.
No,
Kuwait.
No. So I thought perhaps we could talk about that and make that a sub-theme for tonight. And if you want to call, the number is 595-1478. My name is Michael Dyer. You're listening to The Church of the Subgenius with your cordial host, J.R. Bob Dobbs. And I guess the one thing that sticks out in my mind is the... I mean, I say this knowing full well what the answer is, but is the total worldwide disgust and hatred towards this country, when every day there are, you know, in theory, small wars, confrontations going on with far worse results. And of course, we know what the answer is. I mean, the answer is oil. But everyone, I mean, I can't help but think of this unity here.
That's the human scale thing.
All ironies, though, is China cutting off arms supplies to Iraq, bless their hearts, you know, out of the good of their hearts. The Soviet Union and the U.S. having ships, you know, in the Persian Gulf standing by, working side by side.
This is the neighborhood, the Lebanese abandoned neighborhood of the planet, all right, feeling put upon by a software image of Mr. Hussein. It's interesting that the unknown factor for Iraq is King Hussein of Jordan. He has the same name, Hussein. And you have Saddam Hussein. Who's sane? S-A-N-E is the question, right? Who's sane? This is really the fact that the image, the new unprecedented situation of world condemnation is the human scales come back. The world can get together and organize itself and have a sense of community against a software ghost, right? So where did this software ghost come from? I think just give me a little leeway to say something, Mike. Is that all right?
Well, I just noticed we have a caller. Do you want to wait or talk a bit about this first?
If the caller has something relevant, okay.
Okay, we can try. Hello.
Oh.
Hi.
Okay.
How are you doing?
Good.
Bob,
yeah.
I know this is... Mike said something relevant, but I was just reading Frank Zappa's book.
Yeah?
And he mentioned something about you in there.
Yeah, he mentions the Church of Subgenius. He would support Bob, the man with the pipe.
Right. Bob with the pipe.
Yeah, that's what he says, right? That's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Yeah, he mentions the Bob in the book.
And... about Kuwait, anyway. I mean, this has been sort of building up for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. You've led right into it. If you don't have anything to say, let me give you something that you can respond to. Right?
Okay.
We go back to March 26, when the price of gold went up $22. Mm-hmm. Actually, I can't remember. It might have went down, but it was a huge jump. All right. Mm-hmm. Now this was unprecedented in the gold market for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened on March 26? Well, Kuwait dumped 30 tons onto the market. They've been holding gold for 10 years, all right? So Kuwait feels something's coming. Now, that's the, we'll call that the hardware world, the money world, the gold world. But what happened in the software world at the same time, just after that, Iraq sent up a military satellite. All right? So that's going to have effects on the tribal identity of Iraq. All right? It's going to feel, since it's already tribal culture, it will feel the need to expand in its center margin structures. All right? So you got the you got these two grounds. Kuwaitis sees an economic situation coming, and Iraq has a new image to retrieve or to make in relation to itself extended through its own satellite. All right. Then you go to Nightline a couple of weeks ago. On Nightline, they had a top financial expert in the United States explaining that every major American bank, which was the Rockefeller Empire, the oil empire, was insolvent. All right? So there's no money. You have the S&L's crisis all through from March till now. You had the escalation of the S&L debt. It went from $100 billion to $200 billion to $300 billion. Now it's half a trillion. Okay? Then you have chemical weapons. George Bush was pointing out the fear or prospect of chemical weapon warfare in Iraq if they attack, if either side attacks the other. Okay? Now, where did this chemical weapon problem come up? This was predicted by Bob Marshall last September 24th, I think it was. In his broadcast, he pointed out that the people who created the AIDS virus would start to blame Iran and Iraq for chemical weapons and then move on to China. I would see that Iraq would be put in an isolated position as the AIDS story comes out in 1990 and 1991. So I would say that Iraq has to preempt the isolation. All right, now Kuwait was defended by the Pentagon, all right, all through the 80s. Remember the ships went up and down the Gulf protecting Kuwait? Now, is Kuwait a Bolshevik structure, a Bolshevik pawn? Now, the Bolsheviks were the people who took over the Rockefeller Empire in the late 70s, early 80s. Now, I've been saying on my show that the Rockefellers are making a retrieval with the help of Gorbachev, all right? So Iraq was an ally of the Rockefellers all the way through the 80s, and Iran was working with the Bolsheviks. That came out in the Iran-Contra affair where the Pentagon Bolsheviks were dealing with Iran and trading weapons, all right? Now, Iraq is the one who got the gold from the Rockefellers in the early 80s, and then they sold some gold secretly. Now, if the Rockefellers are...
What did you say? Iraq got some gold?
Iraq was given some gold by the Rockefellers in the early 80s to continue the war against Iran. All right? So basically, look at the Iraq-Iran situation as a battle between the Rockefellers and the Bolsheviks. Mm-hmm. Now, in Russia is a new group which is more powerful than both, but is aligned with the Rockefellers and not the Bolsheviks. They've kicked out the Bolsheviks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the Bolsheviks are kicked out of America as the Rockefellers and Russians force them out in the latter part of the 80s, they have to retreat to the Middle East and Europe. Okay, so they unite Germany, right?
Mm-hmm.
This leaves Rockefeller Empire of the United States, Britain, and Russia on the outs.
Mm-hmm.
Ridley, the close friend and member of cabinet in the United Kingdom, during the Houston Economic Summit of the Group of Seven Nations, accuses Germany of setting up a Fourth Reich. All right, this was an unprecedented statement in a diplomatic circle. He had to resign. But they knew what was happening. Now, who was on the White House lawn earlier this week dealing with Iraq and freezing Kuwaiti's funds? Mrs. Thatcher and Bush, with Gorbachev unprecedentedly supporting them. Another unprecedented aspect of this, besides the international consensus of the monster figure of Iraq, was the fact that Switzerland, the center of the gold world, right, joined in the American demand for international condemnation of Iraq. Switzerland, for the first time in its history, joined in on this. Now, what this means is that there was a financial problem happening in Kuwait. Kuwait dumps its gold and goes into cash. Anybody knows if there's going to be a world crisis, the price of gold goes up. The price of gold has not gone up as much to the level of a World War III crisis we're seen to be heading into, right?
Mm.
So if Kuwaiti was Bolshevik controlled, Bush organized and set up this theater for Iraq to invade and seize the Kuwaiti assets by freezing them through the American and British financial structures. Therefore, the Rockefeller oil gang can consolidate themselves as much as possible in the Middle East while the Bolsheviks prop up a united Europe. Now, how is this reflected on the intelligence levels? You have a very strong news stories coming out of both Europe and the United States that represent this factional warfare. In Europe, you have Richard Brennecke on Italian TV exposing the Jelly P2 group, and this made incredible headlines all over the European papers and even made it into our papers, but was not played up in the United States. So you got Brennecke representing, let's say, the Rockefeller faction exposing the Bolshevik-controlled P2 faction in Europe. At the same time, the day Bush is starting to make his input on dealing with Iraq on Monday, out of Dallas, which was the more prone to Bolshevik control in the early 80s, but maybe now, Rockefeller. But assuming it is still in Bolshevik hands, the Bolshevik faction in Dallas, representing the European group, exposes the Kennedy assassination as a threat and attempt to watch and to limit George Bush in his maneuvers in the Middle East. You see what I mean? So you get these two key points of the assassination of the Pope in 1981 and the story of the P2 around that, and then you have the assassination of Kennedy, two strong event figures in the global theater of the last 30 years. These two stories wake up very strongly in the last week, 2 weeks, leading in and happening during this crisis.
So,
we're talking all kinds of factors here that you have to use a tetrad to analyze. The one other factor is that the world government is coming in, and this is a human scale consensus, but really, the world government cannot be a centralized, successful structure because we live in a super solar system that's decentralized, super electronic environment. So in Canada, you have the fourth world rears its separate motif or separatism desire from the world government implosion at OCA, right? That's the they're the figure of fame and of power for the fourth world. And now you have a third world figure in Iraq hoiking itself up as a rebellion against the world government implosion. And that's why you come back to Mike's point, is that the figure of Iraq is posed against the whole world. So that's the third world's rebellion against this electronic implosion effect bureaucratized around the new world government consensus.
So you think this is all pre-planned, obviously.
Pre-planned, yeah, because they cannot have a nuclear war. It's that was worked out and battled out the late 70s, early 80s. The alignments as a result of who won and lost the nuclear war, which never happened physically, but the threats and effects of stopping each other from doing it have been settled. Gorbachev has an extra card in that area. So now all war, all anthropomorphic conflict is like, as I said in my Not Magazine interview, accidents in the kitchen. And these are well controlled and well programmed because they have another agenda, which is based on the erosion of all power, all kinds of power, first, second, third, and fourth worlds, are eroded by the electronic tactile dissolution or evaporation of our universe.
Do you think this is a... I was thinking about this today, and I don't know if it was just a weird thought, but do you think it's all this, these conflicts that are going on is sort of a backlash of the idea that people don't have a Cold War mentality anymore? You know, there's no threat of a communist threat anymore. Is this sort of a backlash?
What is the noun? What's the backlash?
Well, I mean, like all the other little battles that are going on right now, like you know, OCA and Kuwait,
right? That's
and
the
Liberia, you know.
Right. The Cold War was the polarized functions of the industrial hardware world. Okay, the centralized planner known as communist versus the free market Adam Smith capitalist dynamism. Right. So that old hardware dialectic doesn't work anymore, so we've imploded into an image warfare. This creates incredible identity crisis for all cultures, no matter what stage they're at, pre-industrial, industrial, post-industrial. Yeah, so all these conflicts are a result of people trying to retrieve old identities or make new identities because the main identity of the 20th century has been scrapped, the Cold War. Yeah, I would agree. That'd be the reason why conflict, and as our previous caller comrade said, we're going into a more violent world. because there is no...
It seems strange, though, doesn't it?
Not if you understand what...
The Cold War seemed to be, there was always a threat of violence there. And now that it's over with, you'd think that there would be no more violence. But now there seems to be an increase in violence.
Yeah, because...
Sorry, how do you explain that?
The Cold War was based on the dialectic between the various factions of hardware industrial culture, okay? Now, we've no longer lived in the hardware industrial culture for at least 50 years. So the Cold War was propped up as a secret split, whereas behind the scenes there already was a world government. The point is we've now moved into a solar government situation, so they don't need to keep the world government secret. So we now bring in world government, which itself is an obsolete structure and something that we become obsessed with, just like the Cold War was an obsolete structure and something we were obsessed with for 30, 40 years. All right? So the new figure of obsession, rearview mirror in itself, is the world government, world consensus situation. But we don't live in that situation anymore. We live in a solar government and then a solar theater. And that's why the previous caller said the key images of our time are the Challenger blowing up and the Battle of the Harvest Moon in 1977. These spatial conflicts is what's really going on behind the scenes. And then when Iraq put its own satellite up, it entered into the solar government structure, and that's why there was world condemnation. All right?
So do you think there is sort of a scramble here for...
Yes. I didn't finish my...
Still establish a power base for, as you say, like the Rockefellers or...
That's right. That's why I didn't finish
that. They're still trying to maintain control.
Yeah, there's still the world government structure, as puny as it is now. And with the rise of the United Europe, you have the rest of the world scrambling to deal with this new power structure coming out of Europe. All right? And so the Rockefellers are scrambling to maintain their oil empire in the Middle East. And the Arab world is scrambling, and they're going to use this event to create a new regional, you could call it a United States of Arabia, just as the United States of Europe is forming. The United States of Arabia is going to be created out of this, which the Rockefellers may be causing this conflict so they can be very influential in that new United Arabian situation, and they are reacting on a racial tribal level to the rise of the Pope and the Vatican and the United Europe Christian culture that came out of Europe, which is coming back to the Holy Roman Empire. So yeah, the Arab world is scrambling to get a position in the new situation. The Rockefellers are, which is America. So yeah, that's what I would say.
But you don't think Hussein has been is some sort of player in all this, or do you?
Is he a player?
Yeah.
He's an actor. And remember...
Is he acting on his own?
No. Every world figure, every corporate figure, national or industrial, somebody who represents huge environments, represents all kinds of factors. It's not a human image. It looks human to us. It's not anthropomorphic. He represents what I call mixed corporate media. And his mixed corporate media...
Who is he acting on behalf of?
Well, on a simple level, he's acting on the behalf of the Arab world. In relation to the New Europe, all right?
The Arab world is split at this point. Or do you agree about that?
It's a tribal world which was always split more than we were, us being a visually biased culture in the West, and we could have a homogeneous surface, but tribal cultures can never have a homogeneous. They're always heterogeneous. But the problem is the electric environment brings up their decentralized nature in intensity, so they'll scramble for an attempt at homogeneity. They won't arrive at it, but they will certainly, as Europe becomes more tribal, the white world finally regains its tribal identity, which will be new for the white world. The Arabian world will be forced to override their tribal divisions and deal with the tribal interplay of all these different groups. The basic divisions would be 1 billion Christians stretching from Moscow to Los Angeles, 1 billion Muslims, all right?
Yep.
1 billion Hindus, Hindus, let's say,
yep.
And 1 billion Buddhists, all right? And there's 5 billion people. And the 5th billion would be all those subgeniuses or people who don't have a strong identification with tribal identities. So you got the four parts, each of billion, and the 5th billion is the ones who can move around the culture. Now, they're the true future. for the 22nd century, because as these tribal identities collapse into themselves through the electric effects of the 21st century, the super autonomous super angel subgenius individual will be the new world figure.
I think
final question.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure. Okay. I think to make my point more clear is I think do you think Hussein is in collusion with the Western powers?
Yes, certain parts of the Western powers. That's what I'm saying. He's working with the Rockefellers. He's working with the Rockefeller part of George Bush. Remember, George Bush is a mixed corporate media image himself. He represents certain Pentagon Bolsheviks. He represents the Rockefeller domestic power. He represents other levels. So when you
so
say
you
Western...
He's in collusion with Western
powers. Yeah. Yeah, the mixed corporate media world has networks all around the world. They're not defined by race or nation.
So I think this is just a play on his behalf.
A play on the group he represents, and it's not
limited
just to the Arab world.
He's just trying to.
He's been ordered to do this.
You think so?
Yeah, and another level you should think about is that the Bolsheviks propped up the right wing in the early 80s and the fundamentalist preachers, and that's why they were Jimmy Swaggart and Baker moved out in 87 along with the Iran-Contragate effects. These were Bolshevik-controlled entities that were moved out of the United States due to the return of power by the Rockefellers, all right? Now, the genetic scenario coming out of the white race is the biblical revelations, all right? And the Middle East war... The Armageddon is heavily implanted into the mind structure of the white race, and the Bolsheviks were playing on that. I think part of the deal is that the Rockefeller faction within the Bush image is allowing the Pentagon Bolsheviks to act out that biblical scenario as a way of showing that the Gorby Bush trust is really there. You see what I'm saying? You see that if Gorby and Russia does not separate from what Bush wants to do on a public level, then the Pentagon can be reassured that there is unity for setting up a world government. In other words, there is an important role in the effect of Gorbachev to this situation. But for American culture, the white paranoid culture of the Bible Belt, they need to see this Middle East end of the world Armageddon structure acted out too. But this is all controlled, and by another 2 years, we'll be gone well past that. It's an interval before we move into a post-military structure, all right, which was part of the Cold War. So between now and 93, when we refurbish the world economy, we've got to act out some roles for the military. So that's just another thing that's accomplished in this huge, complex, mixed corporate media icon known as Iraq. Okay?
Okay, I'll be calling you back. I've got a few more questions, but
okay.
Obviously we don't have enough time. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for your input.
Bye-bye. Okay.
How are we for time?
We've got about 25 minutes.
Do you want to take any more callers?
Yeah, we've got another caller, so
okay.
Why don't we go right to that. Hello.
How are you?
Good.
I was wanting to know if Bob could tell me something about Gerald Bull's assassination in Brussels by Israeli or Iranian secret agents. And there's a report afterwards that 40 guns were originally manufactured and only the last shipment was apprehended.
Yeah, well, I think Bull was unfortunately caught in his Canadian role within the Bolshevik-controlled Canadian structure of the early 80s, and him being off is a sign of the weakening of the Bolshevik structure in North America. And it happened in Paris, which was Bolshevik-controlled in the early 80s. Well, actually happened, I think, in Amsterdam, but his base was in Paris. All right, yeah, Bull was part of the elimination of that Bolshevik structure in North America. And that was involved with Iran, and he was trading with Iran, right? It's like a fallout from the Iran-Contragate situation.
Was it Iran that he was trading with?
Yeah, well, the Bolshevik, he represented a key agent in the trade of the Bolshevik power structure from North America and around the world. And many people will be surprised to think that Canada was Bolshevik-controlled in the early 80s, and he's proof of it. He's an indication of it, because here was this Canadian genius in the military area, and he turned out to be a very important figure and was killed.
So are these guns a factor in the conflict in Iraq now?
I think so. As Dublin said on the message, remember the Iranians released the hostages at the beginning of this year, right? They started to loosen up them, and they were aware of this shift. So what was your statement? Was so the guns involved with Iran, they're puny hardware elements of this crisis, because most of this crisis is a software battle. The old hardware situation of guns is usually a cover-up for directing money into more surreptitious or secretive forms of software warfare. So I don't think where the guns went is too important. That hardware is not really the level of battle we're dealing with in the Solar government. We're talking laser beam battles. We're talking particle beam weapons. We're talking something beyond the stealth bomber. We're talking chemical warfare, biological warfare.
I thought it was interesting that these guns could possibly launch satellites, so, which was his initial intention.
Right. That's pretty new technology for people to hear about. Mm-hmm. It's important technology, but it's not as important for those that